DF, JQ, RUYB.
What are you doing?
DF, JQ, RUYB, VZB, XFFL, VQ, XLZN.
Fred, you know we're doing an episode about encryption and the Enigma machine, not through encryption using the Enigma machine, right?
Aw, that's no fun. Hello, Mixed Nutcases. Welcome to a special combined episode of Nutty Bites and Epic with an exclamation point. Hi, I'm Tech, and I am a gargantuan nerd, and I have Nutty here.
Hello.
And from S&T Geotronics, I have our special guests today, Mark and James. Hello, gentlemen.
Hey, I'm here. Hey, how are y'all?
Mark and James are the creators of an open source, open hardware Enigma code machine that is currently the center of a highly successful Kickstarter campaign. With 22 days to go, they are $9,000 over goal. So congratulations, gentlemen.
Thank you.
So we'll start with the first question. What is Enigma?
Well, an Enigma is an encryption device. It's the original ones were an electromechanical device that was used to encrypt messages for commerce and industry. And then World War II came along, and the Germans grabbed it and used it to send secret messages in the field and upgraded it several times during the war to try to keep ahead of everybody. And ours is not an electromechanical device. It's purely an electronic computer device.
But why create a replica of an Enigma machine? Like, what is it about Enigma? I mean, it's a 70-year-old code, an 80-year-old code now. What fascinates us so much about this, and why not like a Lorenz machine or a Purple Code or all the other really fascinating crypto from World War II?
Well, in our case, it's an accident, really. We were planning a geocaching event and decided that at the end of the event, it would be cool to have the participant required to decode a cryptic message and discussing the different possibilities. A friend suggested, well, why don't you get an Enigma machine? And we looked around to find one. There was none available and decided we should build our own and started the process of getting an Arduino and wiring it manually and writing the code and publish an instructable on the internet, not thinking that there'd be much interest. But if anybody else out there wants to build his own, there's the recipe. And we instantly, within 24 hours, we had 15,000 views, a whole slew of people asking us if we could please produce a printed circuit board. And from then, it became we offered the board, we offered the kit, and decided to offer it as a finished product as well.
Really, by popular demand, we made boards and people, yeah, well, that's cool. You have a board. Can you send us one that's, you know, got the components already on it? I'm not good at soldering. Well, okay, sure, we can do that, sure. And pretty soon, well, I'm not good at assembling anything. How about a whole one? And one thing led to another, and pretty soon the first functioning unit shipped out, and we've been building a few of them.
Years ago, a friend of mine and I had found a Java applet online that simulated an Enigma coding machine. And the two of us, using our work emails, sent all of our plans for Christmas vacation back and forth in Enigma, called it Operation Drunken Reindeer. I'm sure whoever was snooping on our emails, I'm sure they were quite confused, but it was really, really an enjoyable time.
Well, for the listeners of Nutty Bites, they already know this fellow as the Serial Killer. And I do remember some of those plans were done in public chat rooms. And there was one guy going, I know you're using Enigma, but I have no idea your cipher, so I have no idea what you're saying.
The guy had also opened up the Java applet, and he's trying to guess the Stecker pairs that we had picked. so that he could try to decrypt the cipher. It was nerd fun, but so cool. I noticed on your project that you guys are open source and open hardware on this. Why is that important to you guys?
Well, open source is the way to go because we don't believe that necessarily closed source has been totally responsible with everything. For example, the Windows operating system is closed source, and it catches viruses and gets sick and has lots of problems. And you have a bunch of wonderful Linux operating systems, which are open source. And by nature, they don't get sick with viruses. They work well. If it doesn't do exactly what you want it to, you're welcome to modify it so that it does do exactly what you want it to.
Hang on, I'm sorry. The Linux box does not get sick, but apparently your partner does.
Yes, indeed. I'm under the weather.
He's actually on an upswing. He got hit with something bad. I don't know where it came from, but he's 90% better than he was yesterday.
So yeah, so open source and open hardware is part of our philosophy. It's one of our core values because we feel that we enjoy it as makers in everything we do. So we figured it's a good way to give back and to get a community involved and participate in a better good kind of thing.
You know, and over the course of history, lots of good things have rolled out of the American garage, but we've looked at the maker fairs and the maker community, and we see a lot of real strength in people helping each other. And if you open source something, you're going to get help that you never anticipated. You know, you'll get beta testers that say, hey, there's this little flaw, and how come it doesn't do this, and could you do that? It's a wonderful way to do stuff. It drags stuff out in the open. It takes away controls that people like to put on things. In the garage, I have an electric vehicle that we're fixing to open source. I've already given pretty much most of the details of how the basic drive works, but we're going to do an open source electric vehicle drive. Probably a small one suitable for like a motorcycle, and then a larger one suitable for like a small, medium-sized car.
You guys are just the right guys for our audience. Our audience they're very big on open source, and I'm just loving everything you're saying.
While you've been making this thing, and I love the maker movement and the whole open source thing. I come from the flight simulator community, and a lot of the work that I've been doing, I've relied on open source beta testers to help me with my projects. I'm trying to recreate the CF-105 Aero and make it fly inside a computer realistic to the numbers. It's been a hard year. It's been a lot of hard math and a lot of hard research in books, but I couldn't do it without the help of the open source community that you can find at xplane.org. Ding. But so as you guys have been going through this project and building this Enigma machine, like, what's the biggest challenge been? What sort of unexpected did you guys come across?
Oh, let's see. The first gyration of the code, the challenge was the way that I designed the code to actually process the information in crypt returned bogus numbers because the numbers would get out of range on me because the way the Enigma process works is you go through a rotor and you go in as a value and you come out as a different value. But to index the rotor, I simply choose my entry point by adding and subtracting from the number I'm putting in. And I was returning numbers that were way out in far left field and trying to figure out how did I get here. Because in the Enigma, you do a process and then you go through a reflector and then you basically undo the process that you just did with different values. To wrap my head around the whole process and figure it out was the biggest challenge. But other than that, it was actually pretty simple.
In the case of the Enigma, the challenge is definitely software. The hardware was really simple, with the Arduino doing all of the hand lifting. All we're having is a few resistors and a few LEDs and a bunch of buttons kind of thing. There was not much of a challenge there. But software-wise, and the decision had to be made at the very beginning if we were going to play with substrings and do alpha manipulations, or if it was going to be a numerical. And it ended up being all math. And James decided to set it up in arrays and matrices. So it makes the software look kind of alien, but it's all in the mat. And to get the mat to arrive exactly at the right number and the right behavior kind of thing to translate it back to the encrypted character was a real challenge.
It took the course of about two evenings, and of course Mark was away when I was sitting there poring over the code, and I'd call him up, Mark, I need you to transpose this table of numbers, because I'm not, there's some things I'm not particularly good at physically doing, and typing numbers into the keyboard that I'm reading from a chart, the way my tickiness works is extremely difficult. And Mark can look at the table of numbers and type. Okay, I'm done, next. And so he's typing them into his computer, and he's sending me an email, and I cut the table out of his email and pasted it into the program, and it was pretty hair-raising there for a little bit.
You know, it's amazing. It's an 80-year-old machine that works by rotating wheels, and it takes tables of math and code to recreate it in a computer. I mean, isn't it bizarre that it takes so much technology to recreate a mechanical device that's 80 years old?
Absolutely.
The clockworks is a thing that we really kind of have lost now that we have computers and stuff like that. And a clock with gears and everything is basically a mechanical computer. And all we're doing is making a mathematical representation of what a mechanical machine did.
So what's next for you guys? I mean, you're already over goal. You still got 3 weeks to go. Have you thought of any stretch goals? Are you working on, you mentioned your electric car. Are there any other projects?
Oh, yes, absolutely. So first of all, regarding this Kickstarter, we've got a $50,000 stretch goals where we intend to release some software enhancements, get our M4 to behave like a Telex machine, be fully M3 compatible, allow the user to actually use the Shrek board, the plug board, as a physical device instead of the current implementation, which is all via software. And if we reach that 50,000 level, our goal is really to raise $80,000 or $90,000 with this Kickstarter project. So we have another stretch goal in the 75 range, where if we can get to that level, we're probably going to be sending everybody that contributed a flash drive containing all of the INO source code and PDF and documentations and scans of our diagrams and graphics that we created along the project. But this Kickstarter really, for us, is a proof of concept, and is to launch our company so we can do other things. And Enigma will continue to be a product we support and we love and enhance, but watch out for next Instructable and next Kickstarter that are coming. And indeed, the electric car, the open source electric car, is in the pipeline, along with a few other projects in between before we can get to that car.
We're working on a laser maze, which is actually a video game that you'll actually get in and do the Ethan Hunt thing through the lasers and booby traps and stuff to achieve your goal, sort of deal. We have other products on our website for geocaching that we may kickstart at one point or a time, depending on how we feel about it. This is just our first Kickstarter, our first try at it. The Enigma was a very cool device. Some people send us mail and say, oh, why do you want to encrypt something or do an encrypting device that was broken, 70 years ago? Well, there's still a German message out there that they're using shared computing to try to decrypt. All right?
Because it's cool.
Absolutely.
And there are still a couple messages out there that haven't been decrypted, and they're using shared computing, for God's sake, to try to break. So probably it was a pretty good little key that they had.
Hundreds of computers working together to solve a math problem made by a machine full of whirling disks.
Oh, exactly. God.
Absolutely. Well, that's cool.
It is. Cool. It's totally cool. And I think one important thing to remember here is the reason why they were able to break the Enigma code and other codes in World War II is not because the machine failed, but because of human error.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
It was the process and the behavior of the humans that were using them that made it a flaw.
Now, you see, this here is Dude. He's a really old Dell Latitude computer running Linux. And he can crack a web key in under 15 minutes, and he's not an exceptional piece of computing hardware. It's not because the web key itself is bad. It's not because Dude is a particularly smart computer. It's the implementation of how WEP works, where they damn near share the key in the open. You know, he collects IVs and he compares this to that, and he figures out all the things that possibly cannot be, and he tests the very few remaining keys, and he says, aha, that's the key. And that's why we have WPA now, is because WEP is broke. And by the same token, the Enigma was broke by the way the Germans formatted their message, and that's how it got broke. Alan Turing made him a crypto bomb. He figured out everything that it possibly could be, and then tested the remaining keys until he found it. And he said, you know, and that's a big point I have, that a lot of people are going to be mad with what I'm going to say, because a lot of people think that they're not worthy and that Alan Turing is the father of modern computing. And, yeah, he is kind of, but they're not looking at it correctly. Alan Turing was the first true computer hacker. He took a system and cracked it. And that's the whole point, is he found an efficient, effective means of coming to an end. You know, and that's why we're open source, is because we want everybody to hack our software and make it better.
I agree 100%. This is just awesome. For the listeners at home, both Tech and myself are just nodding our head as you're speaking. It's just absolutely. And by the way, Dude being the name of your laptop there is fantastic.
I need to ask one more question. Where can people find you? And then I will break some bad news to you both. But where can people
find you? All right. Well, we're based in Columbus, Georgia, 2 hours south of Atlanta. On the border of Alabama. We'll be next week, as a matter of fact, 7 days from now, in Charlotte, North Carolina, at the International Charlotte Cryptology Symposium, where we have a short talk on this Open Enigma and the Kickstarter project. We are reachable via our website, stgeotronics.com.
And all of those links will be in the show notes, as well as links to the Kickstarter, which has already met your goal.
Well, it met, our
first safe goal.
Right? The danger with Kickstarter, as opposed to Indiegogo or some other crowdfunding platform, is if you come a dollar short or $1,000 short, it don't matter, you get zero, and you owe nothing to any of the backers. So because this is our first Kickstarter and we didn't know the reception we were going to get with the community, we decided to play safe and have a target that should be easily reachable. And indeed, within 8 days, 9 days, we met our 20,000. But again, the truth be told is we're looking for 80,000. Out of this, and we think we're going to get it.
That's fantastic. Now, a little backstory for the listeners. I'm sitting here in the office in the studio one day, and Tech comes running up. Nutty, you got to look at this. Look, somebody's building Enigma machines. We can't quite back it to the level of getting one built, but I need a t-shirt at least. And he's got all excited, and I looked at it, and I said, this is really cool. I said, they haven't met their goal. How long do they have to the end? Oh, contact them. Let's see if we can get them on the show, which he did. So we have before today, never really spoken to either of you. Whereas a lot of times our guests, we have had a past relationship. So this is just completely random. Tech went and he set this all up because he was so passionate about it. And then by the time we were able to get everything scheduled and get you guys on, you met your goal. And I was so happy when I found that out.
So I
thank you very much.
Oh, no, thank you, guys. This is a wonderful project. I'm going to ask a completely selfish question now. My T-shirt, when you send it, could you guys sign it?
Oh, but of course. Absolutely. And don't be surprised if it comes in a bigger box than it should. So.
Merci beaucoup. Thank you both. We're going to talk. We're going to move on to the other part of the talk now, where we're just going to geekily debate cryptography stories.
Okay. How would you like to start it?
I'd like to start.
This is all your show.
Well, it is my show, and I'm going to drop the big bomb, and I'm going to steal the one that's on everybody's mind, because I'm going to say the best cryptography story ever is Bletchley Park. Alan Turing and the rest of his eggheads who sat in dark rooms looking at weird pieces of paper with a bunch of letters on them and said, huh, somehow this is in German. And then they would go, oh, look, and they're going to attack Moscow. And then... Wait, I can do this faster by making a bunch of world machines on a big board. Let's call it Colossus. And what comes out the other end? German! We win the war! Da-da! Nerds do it! Or what do they call them? Boffins. The British term for a geek is a boffin, but it doesn't have that negative pocket protector connotation that it does in the States. A boffin is a techno guru, a good guy, the guys that win the wars.
A squint.
A squint, exactly.
Well, Tech, you know, Alan Turing was a very interesting man of many dimensions. You know that he was training for the Olympic marathon at one point.
Oh, was he?
I didn't know that.
He was a very amazing person. There are some people that have some things derogatory to say about him, of course. But
regarding his sex life?
Yeah, I guess, but... You know, we're in the modern age, and, you know, I have a wife and a daughter, and those that's the path I chose. But we need to be in an age where, you know, we just people are going to do what they're going to do, and everybody else needs to get used to it.
Thank you.
Yes. Absolutely. And his personal life aside, it had absolutely zero bearing on the work that he did.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
So absolutely.
But he's
and it took 70 years for people to realize that, you know, that he was a hero.
Yes.
Still is.
You know?
Yeah.
One of mine.
He's a hero for many communities. And since we're speaking about Bletchley Park, I was doing a little reading recently. There's a TV series called Bletchley Park. I got all excited.
Circle.
Sorry, Bletchley Circle. I got all excited. I was like, oh, they did a series about code breaking in World War II. And I got Tech to come in and watch. No, it's about code breakers 10 years after the war and what they're doing with their lives now. So there's maybe 15, 20 minutes of actual code breaking footage in there, and it's kind of neat. But I was doing some research, and one of the things that I saw was when they were setting it up, they were saying, leave no stone unturned, get everybody that you possibly can think of. We need brains in here. We need brains in here. And when Winston Churchill came to visit, he took a look around and he saw all the women working there and said, when I said leave no stone unturned, I didn't think you'd take it literally. So Bletchley Park is also pretty forward in the feminist movement because
it was indeed.
You've got these brilliant minds, these women working on codes, and there were so many of them.
Yeah, that's true.
That's absolutely true.
There's a lot of people that underestimate women and underuse women and unfortunately underpay a lot of women, and it's something that society one day is gonna come to terms with. You know, change happens slowly. You know, there's a lot of very capable women out there. There's a lot of women that served in the army with me, and I think that they were promoted slower than men were, and for different reasons, and that was just wrong. And there's a lot of women out there that serve in the forces that are indeed heroes. It's just something that this world's going to have to deal with eventually.
Amen. All right.
I know, Nutty, one of your heroes in the early computing world
oh, yeah.
also served in the military. If we talk about Rear Admiral Grace Hopper.
Absolutely.
Inventor of the phrase debugging when...
Because it was a moth.
Because it was a moth stuck in the computer.
Find a moth. Yeah.
They had to go in and rip out, so...
Well, I'm from the 3rd Infantry Division, and, you know, we have a sledgehammer and all that, and we call it a technical tap.
Absolutely. I'm in the Royal Canadian Electrical Mechanical Engineers, pretty much the same thing as the Ordnance Corps in the United States, and... manual force applicators, also known as
kinetic energy device.
Kinetic energy transfer devices, absolutely. Will solve a lot of problems. We have stoves that we have to destroy before we throw them in the bin. So we have our technical stamp, which is a 9-pound maul. So can you go ahead and stamp that stove for me?
Yep. At the company, I secured some hard drives for disposal with a 3-pound hammer.
There you go. Secured.
That works. One more thing about Grace Hopper is my niece is, I think, 8. I'm not sure exactly. I always forget their ages. They keep changing them on me. And Career. She had to do a presentation where she had to on famous people and so forth, biographies, that's what they're called. And she chose Grace, and she actually has to dress up as her and everything. And I am just so proud that the next generation is learning about these amazing people.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
So what are some of your favorite cryptography stories?
Well, first of all, I'd like to set the record straight on, and I don't want to take anything away from Alan Turing's success and Bletchley Park team and what they did over there. But it should be mentioned that the Enigma was first broken by the Polish. A group of 3 Polish people were able to attack early forms of Enigma and come up with a method to decipher it. And this... knowledge was then transferred to the British, and that's what kickstarted, I think, Alan Turing's and the Bletchley Park crew over there. But these 3 Polish people are I think, frequently forgotten in the story, and I think they're heroes all the same. So.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, thank you very much, both of you. Mark and James, you guys have been fantastic. Everyone, you can visit them at stgeotronics.com. Is that the correct address?
stgeotronics.com.
stgeotronics.com. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Where you can find all sorts of information. If you type Enigma into Kickstarter, you're going to find their Kickstarter. And if you go to nimlast.org, you can find all of the links that you need. And I'm sure they will also be on geekglue.com. Thank you so much for joining us for Nutty Bites and Epic.
Thank you, all. Shows. Thank you for your time.
See you guys.
Bye. Bye.
Want more Epic? For more episodes, show notes, and contact details, head on over to www.geekglue.com/epic. Epic is produced and podcasted in partnership with CHSR 97.9 FM in Fredericton, New Brunswick, Canada. This episode of Epic is licensed under Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives, 3.0 Unported Creative Commons.
And here I stutter and stammer and I make my wife do all the editing later and she'll figure it all out. But now for the bad news.
What's the bad news?
The bad news is we forgot to hit record.
No, that's okay because on-air records anyway.
Oh, the on-air records anyway. Okay,
yes.
Then we are...
So once I hit record,
yes.
I'll just splice in the better audio.
Ah, okay, there we go.
We're all good. That's why I use Hangouts.
I don't need to repeat
any
questions.
Don't worry, this will get edited out. Epic.